You won't find this Jamaica in travel brochures. No beaches, no resorts, just bullet-riddled walls, grieving mothers, and teenagers with Glocks tucked in school bags. From the cyberscam trenches of Montego Bay to the turf wars of Spanish Town, the island is at war, not with invaders, but with itself. G-City, Sparta, Klansmen, One Order. The names are whispered in fear across lanes, schools, even churches. This isn't history. It's now. And the question no one dares to answer is this. Can Jamaica save its next generation before the blood becomes tradition? This is not a story about gangs. It's a story about what happens when a nation forgets its sons. And the mothers are the last ones left to fight. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. It begins not with a shout, but a silence. A silence that falls over an entire block the moment a bike slows down. A silence that follows the sound of a single gunshot echoing through concrete lanes. A silence where mothers lower their eyes, where children freeze mid-play, and where every corner shop knows it's happened again. In Jamaica today, war is not fought on distant battlefields. It's fought at stoplights, school gates, and zinc fences. And the soldiers? They wear no uniforms. Just scars, jeans, and Glocks tucked in waistband grips. This is not the past. This is now. This is the story of modern-day Jamaica, where over 200 active gangs, from urban crews to rural cliques, battle not just for territory, but for dominance over the nation's heart, future, and soul. Jamaica today, murder capital of the region. As of the early 2020s, Jamaica has one of the highest homicide rates per capita in the world. In 2022 alone, over 1,400 murders were recorded, and nearly 70% were gang-related. Spanish Town, Montego Bay, West Kingston, Maypen, Flanker, Jungle. There is no parish untouched. But numbers don't tell the full story. Behind each statistic is a shattered community. A mother who sleeps on the floor to dodge stray bullets. A father who sends his child to school through rival turf and prays. A teen who joins a crew because no one else came calling. What used to be isolated turf wars have now evolved into networked violence, cross-parish feuds, cyberlinked threats, and revenge cycles that outlive the men who start them. The shift from dons to crews. In the past, Jamaica's underworld was defined by towering figures, Jim Brown, Zeke Studis Coke, men who ruled entire garrisons with charisma, brutality, and political backing. Today, there are no singular kings. There are factions. Where once there was one don, there are now dozens of offshoots, younger, hungrier, less disciplined. In places like Spanish Town, the legendary Klansmen gang fractured into subgroups. In Montego Bay, the feud between G-City and Sparta gang shattered into endless retaliation. In Kingston, police intelligence identifies active cliques operating in Denham Town, Maxfield, Rima, Rockford, Dunkirk, and more. The dons have been replaced by Generation Z warlords, many of them in their teens and early 20s. And they answer to no one. Gangs by the numbers, 2020s and beyond. According to the Jamaica Constabulary Force, JCF, the island currently has 200 plus known criminal gangs, 65 to 70 classified as active and operational, several with international links to the US, UK, and Canada. Many involved in lottery scamming, arms trafficking, drug distribution, extortion, and contract killings. The structure varies, from tightly organized syndicates with command hierarchies, to loosely affiliated street cliques bound only by postcodes and pain. Some are armed by overseas guns smuggled in barrels. Others fund their war with scam money, drug sales, or extortion. But all thrive in the same climate, poverty, state neglect, and community silence, where the battles are being fought. Spanish Town, the ancestral home of One Order and Klansmen, now caught in a complex turf war. Recent police operations have revealed split loyalties and secret alliances within these gangs, with contract hits being ordered over phone calls and family ties stretched to breaking. Montego Bay, the new digital warfront. Scamming hotspots fund deadly gun wars. G-City versus Sparta is more than rivalry, it's economic warfare. Denham Town and Tivoli Gardens, Kingston under perpetual ZOSO, zones of special operations. These communities live under lockdown, with police/military patrols daily. Yet violence remains just beneath the surface. August Town, once a peace model, now fractured again by splinter groups, retaliation hits, and young crews. Clarendon and St. Catherine. Areas like May Pen and Old Harbor now report gang migration, as violence spreads beyond the traditional war zones. The cycle, retaliation, recruitment, repeat. One killing begets another. An insult on Instagram leads to a diss track. A diss track leads to a shooting, and the shooting leads to four more. There is no time for mourning, only preemptive revenge. These young men are often raised without fathers, without access to formal work, and with guns cheaper than tuition. Many are first recruited as lookouts or couriers, then tested through violence. Loyalty is enforced by fear. Retreat is punished by death. Once you're in for life. Community impact, living in a war zone. Ordinary citizens are caught in the middle. Residents of gang-affected communities suffer. Extortion of business owners, even corner shops must pay protection tax. Territorial curfews. Residents know what roads they can't walk after 7 p.m. Mistrust of police, many of whom are seen as corrupt or complicit. School disruption, with kids recruited into violence or traumatized by it. Psychological damage, from generational fear and normalized killings. Mothers bury sons with no hope of justice. Fathers disappear before their sons grow teeth. And children dream of Glock 9s instead of graduation gowns. The state's response, ZOSO, SOE, and public relations. The Jamaican government has declared multiple states of emergency, SOEs, and implemented ZOSO zones to flood gang communities with military and police. But the results are mixed. Temporary reduction in shootings. Long-term mistrust of police. Accusations of abuse and corruption. Minimal effect on dismantling gang structures. Many critics argue that these are PR campaigns, not real reforms. The police know who the gangsters are, so do the residents. But nothing changes. Because at its core, Jamaica's gang war is not just a criminal issue, it is a social collapse. Closing reflection, a nation held hostage. Jamaica is a country of music, resilience, beauty, and brilliance. But beneath the postcard lies an island held hostage, not by ideology or politics, but by fear. The gang crisis is no longer just a law enforcement problem. It is a cultural, economic, and generational war. A war that cannot be won with bullets alone, only with truth, justice, opportunity, and the courage to confront the roots, not just the symptoms of violence. Because if the silence continues, the next name etched into a zinc fence won't be the last. This is not one war. It's dozens of them, simultaneous, territorial, unforgiving. There is no single front line in Jamaica's gang crisis, because the island is a checkerboard of contested spaces, each one ruled not by government, but by guns and grudges. In Spanish Town, two men are gunned down at a taxi stand over who controls a square. In Montego Bay, an Instagram video sparks gunfire between rival crews. In the corporate area, young boys avoid entire streets simply because a cousin lives in a different lane. This is Jamaica's internal map. A divided, invisible nation where borders are not drawn by ink, but by blood. A nation carved by gangs. The Jamaica Constabulary Force, JCF, has identified over 65 active criminal gangs with organized structures and violent reputations. But that number doesn't tell the full story. Across every parish, gangs operate with hyper-localized control, often splitting communities block by block, alley by alley. Their borders are invisible to the naked eye, but painfully clear to those who live there. You might live in a place called Sunlight District, but ask a resident what it really is. They'll say, that's Sparticide, or that's one order turf, or you sigh and walk dead if you link with G-City. Jamaica is one island, but multiple territories, each enforced by youth militias, trigger men, and decades of historical beef. Spanish Town, the original war zone, located in St. Catherine Parish, Spanish Town is home to two of the island's most infamous gangs. One Order Gang, based in De La Vega City. Klansman Gang, based in Terror Zone / Jones Avenue / March Penn Road. These two groups trace their origins to the early 1990s, but remain bitter enemies today. Over the last decade, both gangs have splintered into sub-factions, each vying for control of extortion routes, drug points, and reputational dominance. In 2021, over 33 members of the Klansman gang were arrested in one of Jamaica's largest anti-gang trials. Yet the killings in Spanish Town continued, proof that the structure regenerates faster than the state can dismantle it. The fight here is historic, but the new generation, teens and 20-somethings, see it as personal. Montego Bay, the digital war capital. In the western parish of St. James, Montego Bay is ground zero for a different kind of war. Gangs like G-City Glendevin, Sparta Gang, Catherine Hall / Flanker, are no longer just battling over turf. They are battling over scam money, online clout, and social media disrespect. Lotto scamming has turned young men into millionaires overnight, and rival gangs now fight over access to victim lists, computers, call centers, and scamming hotspots. These gangs use social media for taunts and death threats, custom vehicles to hide weapons, drone footage, and WhatsApp tracking to stalk rivals. When a G-City member is killed, Sparta responds. When Sparta posts a video, G-City retaliates. In this cycle, the gun is both the message and the reply. Kingston and St. Andrew, fragmented capital. The corporate area is the most densely gang-occupied region in Jamaica, but the warfare here is fragmented, hyper-localized, and multi-directional. Communities with high gang activity. Denham Town, Rema, Wilton Gardens, Jungle, Arnett Gardens, Rockford, Dunkirk, Seaview Gardens, Waterhouse, Maxfield Avenue. These zones are controlled by independent gangs, not centralized donships. Many are post-political, meaning they have no allegiance to PNP or JLP. They are loyal only to their clique, their corner, and their code. These areas are also locked in micro-turf wars, with boundaries often drawn down the middle of a single road. One lane over, you're safe. Two steps further, you're a target. Clarendon, St. Thomas, Westmoreland, expanding front lines. As pressure from police operations increases in urban centers, gang activity has migrated to rural and peri-urban parishes. In Clarendon, criminal networks now dominate parts of Maypen and its outskirts. In Westmoreland, towns like Savannah Lamar have seen surges in murders and armed robberies, with gangs such as Dawling Street Crew making headlines. In St. Thomas, known for historical Maroon resistance, modern criminality is creeping into small districts once thought immune. These areas become refuges for gangsters escaping Kingston or Mobay, but quickly turn into new battlegrounds. Gang splintering and the disintegration of discipline. A key trait of modern Jamaican gangs is their unpredictable fragmentation. Where there was once one order, now there's son of one order, young order, and unaffiliated breakaways. This splintering causes randomized violence, untraceable orders, power struggles within the same umbrella gang. This makes it almost impossible for law enforcement to negotiate or suppress violence because the leadership changes weekly and loyalties shift with every funeral. How the borders work. These gang borders are taught, not drawn. Residents learn by whispers. Don't pass so-and-so road after dark. Experience. A cousin went missing for crossing into rival turf. Color coding. Some crews use clothing colors to mark affiliation, e.g., red or green. Association. Talking to the wrong friend could mark you for death. The average teenager in a high-risk zone has a better mental map of gang territory than of their country's geography. Territory means power. Control over territory brings real benefits. Extortion income from businesses. Hideouts for weapons. Access to main roads for drug/mule routes. Proximity to police patrols for avoidance. Which is why violence erupts over what looks like minor turf, an empty lot, a block, a gully. Because to a gang, it's not a lane. It's leverage. The community's trapped within. Residents don't just fear stray bullets. They fear being labeled as affiliated with a rival. Having to walk around rival blocks to get to work or school. Refusing extortion demands and getting dealt with. Having to leave home permanently if a family member is targeted. The psychological borderlines are just as powerful as the physical ones. And as long as these micronations within Jamaica exist, peace will remain not just elusive, but unimaginable. Final reflection, an island divided. Jamaica is marketed as a single paradise. But in reality, it is dozens of fractured war zones, each controlled by unofficial governments that enforce order through bullets and silence. If you look closely, the truth is chilling. The state does not control the full island. The gangs do. And until those borders are dismantled, not just policed, but transformed, Jamaica will remain a land split in two, the official map, and the one no tourist ever sees. You may never hear their names on the news. But inside Jamaica's streets, they are known, whispered in fear, respected in silence, etched into walls in red spray paint and blood. They do not wear uniforms. They do not file taxes. Yet they control entire neighborhoods, extort businesses, order executions, and command loyalty deeper than blood. These are Jamaica's modern gangs, no longer relics of a post-colonial past, but highly active, highly lethal organizations embedded in everyday life. This chapter exposes them by name, traces their evolution, maps their rivalries, and reveals the hidden hierarchy behind Jamaica's urban war. Klansmen Gang, Spanish Town, St. Catherine. Base, Jones Avenue, Spanish Town. Faction, split into One Don and other rival splinters. Known leader, Andre Blackman Bryan, alleged head of the One Don faction. Crimes, extortion, murder for hire, drug distribution, arms trafficking, intimidation. The Klansmen Gang is one of Jamaica's oldest and most violent criminal syndicates. Born out of Spanish Town in the late 1980s, its original structure aligned with political power before splintering into internal factions following leadership arrests and internal betrayals. The One Don faction is currently the most prominent, allegedly led by Andre Blackman Bryan, now facing trial for multiple murders and gang-related crimes. The trial, involving over 30 alleged gang members, is the largest anti-gang prosecution in Jamaican history. Klansmen has fractured into at least three splinters. But the blood feud with rival One Order continues to plague Spanish Town streets, resulting in nearly weekly gunfire, curfews, and civilian deaths. One Order Gang, De La Vega City, Spanish Town. Base, De La Vega City. Leadership, diffuse structure, multiple leaders by zone. Crimes, extortion, gun running, turf warfare, contract killings. One Order emerged in the late 1990s as a counterforce to Klansmen and has grown into one of the most entrenched gangs in the St. Catherine region. It is known for brutal retaliation campaigns and tight control over its communities through taxes, enforced silence, and organized violence. Though lacking a charismatic public leader like Klansmen's Blackman, One Order remains lethal, with police linking it to over 50 murders in the past 5 years alone. G-City Gang, Glen Devon, Montego Bay. Base, Glendevon, Glendevon, St. James. Known leader, names change frequently, current factions operate under street-level commanders. Crimes, lottery scamming, extortion, gun smuggling, public shootings. G-City, Glendevon City, has become a notorious name in Montego Bay's gang war, known for its public executions, Instagram live taunts, and ties to scam money. The gang often clashes with Sparta Gang, and both have been linked to mass killings and drive-by shootings in the tourism hub. The warfare between G-City and Sparta has caused frequent lockdowns in Montego Bay, including military curfews and Zoso deployments. The gang is composed largely of young men under 25, and unlike the traditional Don system, leadership is based on fear, status, and profit, not legacy or discipline. Sparta Gang, Catherine Hall / Flanker, Montego Bay. Base, Catherine Hall, Flanker. Known associations. Once rumored connections to entertainer Tommy Lee Sparta, who has denied direct involvement, but was convicted of firearm possession. Crimes, contract killings, scam-based funding, online warfare, extortion. Sparta Gang operates with a similar structure to G-City, decentralized, digital savvy, and deadly. Known for flashy online videos and encrypted message coordination, the gang has clashed with rivals over control of scamming zones and extortion rackets. Police believe Sparta uses music and culture as camouflage, embedding gang influence in the local entertainment scene to recruit and launder money. Sparta's youth-heavy structure has made it volatile. Many members are under 21, and killings are often retaliation for online posts, not money. Ratback Gang, Southside, Downtown Kingston. Base, Tel Aviv / Southside, near Raytown. Crimes, gun trafficking, robberies, gangland killings, contract violence. One of Kingston's most feared inner-city gangs, Ratbat holds dominance over the downtown waterfront strip, controlling alleys and docks used in arms smuggling. While not as widely publicized, their turf control is tight and retaliatory attacks are swift. Ratbat has historically clashed with nearby gangs from Dunkirk and Rockford. Big Yard Gang, Waterhouse, Kingston 11. Base, Waterhouse, Drizland. Crimes, local extortion, community intimidation, firearm distribution. Big Yard operates within West Kingston's notorious Waterhouse community and has long been a fixture in gun-related violence. The gang enforces border rules, forbidding outsiders from even walking through certain lanes. They often work in tandem with other microcrews in the Maxfield and Waltham zones. Shoah Gang, Clarendon Maypen. Base, Effortville / Farm Maypen. Crimes, regional killings, gun running, contract hits. Operating outside the usual Kingston Mobay focus, Shoah Gang is a Clarendon-based outfit tied to over a dozen contract killings. It has expanded into street and in Manchester, moving drugs and coordinating hits on behalf of urban gangs. Its rural setting provides cover, but its violence is just as lethal. Other notable crews: Young Generation Gang, based in Denham Town, known for recruitment of minors and territorial warfare with nearby jungle. Dalling Street Crew, Westmoreland-based group causing surging violence in Savannah Lamar. Screamers Gang, involved in scam wars, believed to operate near Norwood. Crazy Gang / Piranha Gang / Kings Valley Gang, active in St. James and Trelawney. Each has its own dialect, leaders, and unwritten rules. All are armed. All are dangerous. Networked violence and international ties. Many Jamaican gangs have overseas affiliates, especially in New York City, Brooklyn, Bronx, Toronto, London, Miami. These links provide access to guns via illegal shipping barrels, funding through lotto scamming and narcotics, exile options when things get too hot in Jamaica. Jamaican gangs are no longer local turf crews. They are part of a global web, trafficking drugs, exporting violence, and smuggling influence. The structure, loyalty, power, and blood. Despite decentralization, most gangs operate with a top man or shot caller, zone captains for specific areas, soldiers who carry out orders, recruiters who find young boys, women serving as couriers, lookouts, or financial managers. These hierarchies are enforced by fear and benefit, protection for the loyal, execution for traitors. Closing reflection, naming the shadows. You may never see their faces on the evening news, but their names are carved into communities with each bullet. These gangs are not just groups. They are systems, born from neglect, built on poverty, sustained by silence. To confront them, Jamaica must first name them, understand them, expose them, because only when the shadows are named can they begin to be dismantled. The weapon isn't always a gun anymore. Sometimes it's a phone. Sometimes it's a laptop in a zinc-roofed shack. Sometimes it's a voice, young, confident, with a Jamaican accent softened to sound like California, telling an old woman in Ohio, "Congratulations, you've won $5 million. And she believes him, because that voice doesn't sound like a criminal. It sounds like hope. But behind that phone line, deep in the hills of St. James or the alleys of Flanker, that teenager isn't just scamming, he's funding a war. This is the story of lotto scamming, the cybercriminal empire fueling Jamaica's modern gang economy. It is less visible than the street shootouts, but more profitable, more seductive, more dangerous, and in many ways more devastating. What is lotto scamming? Lotto scamming is a form of advance fee fraud where the scammer convinces a victim, usually an elderly American, that they've won a lottery or sweepstake. To claim the winnings, the victim is told they must first pay fees for processing, taxes, or customs clearance. The scammer then collects thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of US dollars, through wire transfers, money orders, or gift cards, all while never revealing their real name, identity, or country of origin. And the victims? Most never realize they've been conned until their life savings are gone. Where it all began, Montego Bay's cyber boom. The roots of Jamaican lotto scamming trace back to the early 2000s in St. James Parish, especially Montego Bay, Norwood, Flanker, and Glendevin. As international tourism exploded, so did exposure to high-speed internet and digital technology. Disaffected youth, many of whom were unemployed but tech-savvy, realized they could access American phone books, email addresses, and online directories. By 2007, entire communities had converted bedrooms into call centers. Scammers used lead lists, databases of vulnerable people, mostly seniors, purchased from US data brokers. They learned to mimic accents, use fake names, and play on emotion. Some posed as lawyers, some as IRS agents, some as grandchildren. The money flowed in. How it funds gang warfare. Lotto scamming is not just a hustle. It is now a gang economy. Today, criminal networks use scam proceeds to buy firearms, often smuggled from the US, pay legal fees for arrested members, bribe police or politicians, finance retaliation killings, recruit underage members with flashy gifts. In Montego Bay, especially, the rivalry between G-City and Sparta Gang is fueled almost entirely by scam profits. Territories are no longer fought over for turf alone, but for access to scammers' call centers and lead lists. A single caller can generate upwards of $10,000 per week. Crews fight for control of these earners. And when one dies, another is recruited fast. The youth trap, why teenagers are scamming. Jamaica has a youth unemployment crisis. In inner-city communities, some boys as young as 13 or 14 are brought into scamming operations as warmers, practicing lines, learning voice modulation, and earning commissions for successful calls. The promises are intoxicating. Nike shoes, iPhones, gold chains, bikes. Girls respect power. And most of all, escape from poverty. But there's a dark flip side. Once a boy starts making money, he becomes a target. Rival gangs may kill him for his SIM cards, laptops, or out of envy. If he tries to quit, he may disappear. Scamming is entry-level crime, but it fast-tracks you into Jamaica's deadliest circles. Scamming culture, music, image, and acceptance. Unlike drugs or gun running, lotto scamming has developed a public identity. It's in the music. Dancehall artists reference Leeds, Western Union, and Chop Line. Songs like Money Me Want or Client Convo glorify the hustle, complete with skits reenacting scam calls. Some even drop music videos from scam-funded mansions, flaunting jewelry and U.S. cash. And in many impoverished areas, there is little moral resistance. To the youth and flanker, scamming isn't stealing. It's survival. After all, the government never gave them anything. But the client gives them everything. This normalization makes scamming harder to stop, because it's not just an income. It's a culture. The law responds. MoCA task forces and FBI involvement. Jamaica's law enforcement has not been blind to the threat. The major organized crime and anti-corruption agency, MoCA, alongside the Jamaica Constabulary Force, JCF, and FBI, have launched joint operations targeting major scammers. Arrests have been made, flashy mansions seized, phones tapped, crypto accounts frozen. But for every one scammer caught, 10 more emerge. Because the system that enables scamming, unemployment, poor education, weak digital laws, remains in place. The dark tech behind the calls. Modern scammers use voice over IP VoIP to mask location. Caller ID spoofing apps to appear as 1 to 800 numbers. Virtual assistants and chatbots to automate bait. Cryptocurrency wallets to launder funds. Fake websites to create legit sweepstakes branding. Dark web forums to sell US lead lists. This is no longer just boys with phones. This is digital organized crime, and it's becoming harder to trace every year. The moral collapse, victims and consequences. Most of the victims are elderly. Many live alone. Some develop mental illness after losing life savings. Others, tragically, take their own lives. In Jamaica, the scammers never see this. But the damage is real. And as long as the system rewards deceit over hard work, as long as gangs need money to buy guns, as long as phones are more powerful than ballots, the lotto war will continue. Final reflection, from laughter to bloodshed. What starts as a joke, me chop D-line today, ends in gunshots. Because scamming doesn't stay digital. It spills into lanes, into turf, into funerals. The teen who once faked an accent becomes a real killer. The gun he bought with client money is now in a child's face. And Jamaica, island of culture and brilliance, becomes a battleground of keyboards, guns, and greed. This is the new face of gang crime, and it's calling from inside the house. The headlines rarely mention their names. The court transcripts focus on the men. The news cameras catch the gunmen, not the women behind them. But in the shadows of Jamaica's gang war, women are not bystanders. They are mothers protecting sons, girlfriends hiding guns, matriarchs commanding respect, and in some cases, strategists shaping the survival of the street. This is the untold side of Jamaica's gang crisis, where femininity becomes armor, silence becomes power, and love and loyalty blur into life or death. The mother code, raising sons in a war zone. In gang-controlled neighborhoods, the first line of defense is often the mother. She is the one who hides her teenage son during police raids, begs a local don for mercy after a killing, sends her boy to school with prayers instead of breakfast, teaches him how to walk carefully, not just through streets, but through alliances. These mothers raise children in communities where fathers are gone, jailed, or buried, where survival means learning who not to look at, which lane not to cross, and how to listen without asking questions. For them, motherhood is war, and love is measured in how many times she saves him from the police, the rival gang, or himself. The mules, risking everything in silence. Across the island, young women are being recruited as mules, carrying weapons, drugs, and scam proceeds through police checkpoints, airports, and gang-controlled zones. Why women? Because they're less likely to be stopped. Because they're trusted. Because their bodies, pregnant, polished, or polite, are seen as invisible. Some smuggle cash hidden in baby bags. Others move USB drives with scam information tucked in bras. Some travel abroad with suitcases pre-packed by the gang. They don't always know what's inside, but many do. And for some, especially single mothers, the choice isn't between crime and morality. It's between crime and starvation. The top girl. Power, loyalty, and danger. In every crew, there's a top girl. She may not pull the trigger, but she knows who does. She is often the girlfriend of the gang leader, a fierce enforcer of loyalty, a broker of disputes, a keeper of secrets. She handles money, messages, movements. She may own the house where guns are stored or manage a local bar used for meetings. She wears power like perfume, sweet but dangerous. But her position is fragile. If her man dies, she may be next. If she's suspected of betrayal, she vanishes. And if she loves too hard, it becomes a weakness. The matriarchs, mothers of the garrison. In some communities, elder women hold immense influence. They are not gangsters, but they are respected by gangsters. They are the ones who call a truce between warring youths, tell a don to stop a revenge killing, organize food distributions during curfews, protect the innocent by negotiating quietly. These matriarchs are cultural custodians, rooted in faith, memory, and survival. They've buried sons. They've raised generations. And their word can sometimes do what 1,000 police cannot. But their power is built on legacy. And it's fading, because the new generation of gangs doesn't listen to elders. They listen to YouTube, to Glock clicks, to disrespect, love in the time of warfare. Behind the gunplay is a tragic truth. Many women fall in love with gangsters. They fall for the charisma, the protection, the money. But the price is always the same: being used as bait, being arrested alongside him, being beaten for disloyalty, or waking up to his body on the news. Some women become tools, manipulated, silenced, and discarded. Others become soldiers, loyal to the end. And a few become queen pins, running operations when the men go down. But every love story in the underworld ends one of three ways: jail, death, or trauma. The children they raise. The children of these women grow up in contradictions, told not to trust the police, but also told to avoid gangs. Watch their fathers vanish. Watch their mothers survive, told to rise above it, but dragged back in by environment, pressure, and poverty. And so the cycle continues. Mothers raise sons who become gangsters. Girlfriends birth daughters who become couriers. Grandmothers bury them both. This isn't just a crime wave. It's a generational crisis. And the women are holding the line alone. The silenced voices. Many women in the gang world never speak. Not to police. Not to the media. Not to friends. Because to speak is to die. And yet, they endure. They hide the weapons. They protect the children. They clean the blood. They remember the names. They carry the weight. And in the silence, they form a kind of power. Unrecognized. Uncelebrated, but unshakable. Final reflection: the hidden generals. You won't find them on the most wanted list. They're not in charge of scamming crews or street patrols. But without the women, the gang structure collapses. They are the logistics, the communication, the refuge, the resistance. Some are complicit. Some are trapped. Some are fighting back in whispers. But all of them are survivors, navigating a world of violence, loyalty, and impossible choices. In Jamaica's war, they are not just mothers or lovers. They are the hidden generals, holding up an empire, while praying it crumbles. They arrive at dawn, soldiers in armored trucks, police in tactical gear. Helicopters circle above like steel vultures. The community holds its breath, children pressed to windows, mothers whispering prayers, young men erasing texts from their phones. This isn't a war zone in the Middle East. This is Denham Town, or Mount Salem, or Savannah Lamar. And the message is clear: the state is here. But is it here to protect or to perform? In the war against Jamaica's modern gangs, the government's most public weapons are ZOSO and SOE, strategies of militarized control wrapped in policy language. But behind the polished press releases lies a haunting question. Can the Jamaican state defeat the very criminal systems it once helped build, when parts of that same state are still feeding the beast? What is ZOSO? ZOSO stands for Zone of Special Operations, a law enforcement and community development initiative launched in 2017. Its core strategy: clear, hold, build. Clear the area of guns, gang members, and violent threats. Hold the area through sustained police and military presence. Build the community through social intervention, job training, education, housing support, youth programs. On paper, ZOSO is designed to be a blend of force and compassion. Heavy boots on the ground combined with long-term healing. The first ZOSO was declared in Mount Salem, St. James. Since then, others have followed in Denham Town, Kingston, Norwood, Greenwich Town, Savannah Lamar, August Town. In each, the strategy is the same: tight lockdowns, roadblocks, curfews, and long-term military occupation. SOE, states of emergency. Separate from ZOSO, the government has frequently declared states of emergency, SOEs, granting extraordinary powers to law enforcement. Under SOE, police and soldiers can detain citizens without a warrant, set up checkpoints at will, search homes and vehicles without prior approval, impose curfews, and limit movement. SOEs are usually declared in high murder parishes, St. James, Clarendon, Kingston, St. Catherine. They are presented as temporary crackdowns aimed at restoring order. But critics argue that SOEs are bandages on bullet wounds, dramatic in appearance, ineffective in substance, and ripe for abuse. Are they working? Short term? Yes. Whenever ZOSO or SOE is implemented, murder rates drop temporarily. There's a visible police presence, fewer shootings, a sense of calm. Long term, the gangs return, because most gang leaders simply relocate during SOE periods. Guns are hidden, not surrendered. The root causes, poverty, trauma, unemployment, remain untouched. Social interventions often come too little, too late. In many cases, as soon as the soldiers leave, the violence returns worse than before. Why? Because now, the gangs know how to adapt. They change tactics, use younger soldiers, go digital, lower visibility, police corruption, the system within the system. ZOSO and SOE are built on the idea that the state is clean and the streets are dirty. But in Jamaica, that line is blurred. The reality is that parts of the very institution fighting gangs are compromised by them. Corrupt officers leak information about upcoming raids, accept bribes to lose files, protect known gangsters in exchange for money, plant weapons or frame innocents to meet arrest quotas, sell guns back onto the street after seizures. In 2021, the Independent Commission of Investigations, INDECOM, investigated over 100 fatal shootings involving police officers. In many communities, residents fear police violence almost as much as gang violence, because sometimes it's the same thing. The voice of the people: fear, silence, distrust. Ask someone in Denham Town what they think of ZOSO, and you'll hear, "When de soldier dem de here, ting's quiet, but me still sigh and talk out." Ask a mother in Mount Salem, "Dem SEH development, but me still sigh and find job. So how me fi feed me pick me?" Ask a youth in August Town, "If me talk to de police, me dead. If me talk to de gang, me trapped. So me just stay silent." The build phase of ZOSO, job creation, youth programs, housing reform, is often underfunded, underdelivered, or altogether absent. What remains is military occupation without meaningful change. And for the youth, silence becomes survival. Public theater versus private reality. Every time ZOSO is announced, politicians hold press conferences. Community leaders are flown in. Media cameras roll through the streets. Officers smile for photos with seized rifles. But when the cameras leave, the guns go back into hiding. The killers return. The residents retreat into caution. ZOSO becomes more about appearance than transformation. A temporary calm, not a permanent peace. The cycle no one breaks. A gang war erupts. Innocents are killed. SOE is declared. Arrests are made. Community is silenced. The government claims victory. The gangs adapt. Repeat. It's a cycle Jamaica has lived with for over two decades. And unless something changes at the structural level, not just tactical, it will continue. Final reflection, policing a broken trust. Law enforcement is necessary. But in Jamaica's gang crisis, force without trust is just fear. To win this war, the state must clean its own house. Invest in the build phase, not just the raids. Empower communities instead of occupying them. Give young people more than prison or death. Because when the people no longer believe the police, and when the gang becomes the only visible order, the line between criminal and savior disappears. And in that vacuum, even the soldiers look like strangers. Once, warfare was waged with machetes and whispers. Then came the gun. Now the battlefield is digital. The gun is still present, but so is the smartphone. The trigger finger? It's also the thumb, scrolling and posting, taunting and live-streaming death. In Jamaica today, gang violence is no longer confined to back alleys and dusty turf. It's broadcast on YouTube, whispered in diss tracks, framed in Instagram captions, and live-streamed with the words, "We outside. This is not just music. This is murder in melody. Revenge in rhythm. Death is content." Welcome to the era where reputation kills faster than bullets, and where clout is worth dying for. Dancehall, trap dancehall, and the gang identity. Jamaica has always been a land where music tells stories of pain, resistance, love, and survival. But in recent years, a new genre has emerged. Trap dancehall, darker, grittier, hyperlocal. It combines the beat of Atlanta trap with the patois of the Kingston streets. And its lyrics are often soaked in violence, coded threats, and specific names. These songs are not just creative expressions. They're war anthems, soundtracks to turf wars, tributes to fallen gangsters, and warnings to rivals. Artists rap about specific zones, weapons used, enemies buried, crimes committed. And because many of these artists grew up in gang-dominated areas, the line between storytelling and real life doesn't just blur, it disappears. Diss tracks and deadly responses. In the streets, the unwritten rule is clear. Disrespect must be answered. So when a song is dropped that calls out a rival crew, by name, by slang, or by coded reference, violence often follows. Examples. A line like "Dem Boy Cyan Come Back to La Vega" is heard by fans as a public declaration of territorial control. A lyric like "Me a D Real Demon, Your Friend a Duppy Now" is taken as a taunt for a recent killing. These songs go viral fast, racking up millions of views. But they also put real lives in danger. Because once a name is called, retaliation is expected. Social media as a weapon. Modern gang warfare in Jamaica lives online. Gang members post guns and cash on Instagram stories. Go live after a successful hit. Mock rivals' funerals with emoji-laced captions. Drop TikToks that flash gang signs or diss opposing crews. And the audience? They're not just watchers, they're participants. Likes become validation. Shares become threats. Comments become digital battlegrounds. In some communities, teens track gang beefs like reality TV, following accounts that post graphic footage, updates, and coded messages. But when a line is crossed online, it doesn't stay online. It crosses back into the street, with blood. Clout equals currency. What does it mean to have clout in the Jamaican gang world? It means your name is feared. Your song is trending. Your Instagram is lit. Your face is known, even to your enemies. In an environment where jobs are few, education is limited, and trauma is everywhere, reputation becomes everything. Some gangsters pay influencers to feature their music. Others film their lifestyle as proof of power. A few even sponsor local events or parties to show dominance. But clout has a cost. Because in the gang world, the more known you are, the more hunted you become. Artists caught in the crossfire. Some dancehall artists have been arrested, shot at, banned from performing, blamed for inciting violence. While many artists maintain that they are just reflecting reality, others use their music to settle personal vendettas or defend their crews. In 2021, popular artist Tommy Lee Sparta was arrested and sentenced on gun charges. His connections to the Sparta gang were heavily rumored, though never confirmed in court. To fans, his lyrics were entertainment. To police, they were evidence. This blurring of line between artist and gangster, stage and street, makes regulation nearly impossible, and the consequences very real. Police versus lyrics. Can music be a crime? The Jamaican government has occasionally tried to crack down on violent music, especially songs that glorify gunplay, scamming, gang affiliations. But artists argue this is censorship, not crime prevention. They say, you ban the song, but you nah ban the system that made it necessary. It's a battle of freedom versus safety. And in that tension, the music continues, uncensored, unfiltered, unrelenting. Psychological warfare, the culture of fear. To many, the music may sound like braggadocio. But to those in the life, it's psychological warfare. A simple lyric can trigger panic in a rival crew. Send a warning to police. Reassure the community that their don is still in control. Encourage young recruits to step up and earn their name. In this climate, young boys study lyrics like war manuals. Not to enjoy, but to prepare. Because tomorrow, the song might be about them. Final reflection, when sound becomes a sword, music is Jamaica's heartbeat, its voice, its export, its pride. But when that music becomes a weapon, when lyrics are eulogies in advance, when a beat leads to a bullet, we must ask ourselves, is this expression or escalation? The answer isn't easy, because some of the most violent songs are also the most honest, and some of the most dangerous men are also the most lyrical. But one truth is clear. In this war, image is everything, and to lose face is to lose your life. He's 15. He doesn't have a birth certificate. He's never been to high school, but he knows how to strip a Glock blindfolded. He knows what to do when police enter the lane. He knows how to move silently, shoot quickly, and disappear before daylight. His name isn't known outside his block, but in his crew, he's already earned his stripes. This is Jamaica's hidden army, not of soldiers, not of militants, but of children turned killers. They weren't born criminals. They were recruited, radicalized, and raised in war. Who are the youth soldiers? Jamaica's youth gang members are mostly boys aged 13 to 19, from low-income, father-absent households, raised in areas like Denham Town, Spanish Town, Flanker, Seaview, Jungle, and August Town, frequently school dropouts, or never enrolled to begin with, living in homes where gangs are family, not fear. Many are recruited before they even understand what the gang really is. They're sent to watch the lane, then to drop off a bag, then they're told to fire two shots. And just like that, they're in. No ceremony, no warning, just one action that changes everything. Why are they so easy to recruit? Because the gangs offer what the country doesn't. Gangs give protection, purpose, belonging, money, respect. Society gives silence, neglect, police harassment, hunger, no future. To a boy growing up in a zinc-roofed one-room house with four siblings and no electricity, a gun is a tool of elevation, not violence. Value, the psychology of grooming. Gangs understand one thing well. Boys don't join for crime, they join for identity. They groom like cults. Older big man mentors them. They're told they're special, brighter than the rest, cut out for this. They're gifted phones, clothes, new crepes, shoes, sometimes even cash for mom. Then comes the test. Maybe it's just a robbery. Maybe it's a warning shot. Maybe it's a murder. And once that line is crossed, there's no going back. Now they're owned, armed and online. Modern youth soldiers don't just walk with guns. They walk with phones, filming themselves rapping, flashing firearms, and flexing their crew. Social media becomes their resume, their warning, their stage. Some even record farewell videos before retaliation hits, admitting they're likely to die, but proud to have represented the ends. They go viral, but they don't live long. What happens at home? Most of these boys live with a mother stretched thin, a grandmother raising six kids alone, an uncle who's already in a gang, or no one at all. At night, gunfire is their lullaby. In the morning, chalk outlines are their alarm clocks. There is no peace, only pause. And when that pause ends, they must be ready. The school system breakdown. Many of these youths are not formally educated. They drop out by age 11 or 12. Some due to violence, some due to hunger, others due to lack of access or uniforms. In areas like Central Kingston, Savannah Lamar, St. James Norwood, schools are often undersupplied, understaffed, unprotected. Some gang leaders deliberately pull boys from school, arguing, school scion feed ya. Dis will. It's not just a dropout crisis. It's a war for young minds, and the state is losing. The cycle of trauma and repetition. These boys have seen friends murdered, lost brothers to bullets, been detained and beaten by police, been shot and left untreated. buried peers before they hit age 16. So when they pick up a gun, it's not out of madness. It's out of grief, fear, survival, and indoctrination. In many cases, they don't expect to live past 20. So they move reckless, fast, deadly, because every moment feels borrowed. The police response, brutal and incomplete. When the state does respond, it's often with brute force, curfews, random searches, illegal detentions. Some officers see every teenage boy as a suspect. Others, in frustration, abuse them, physically or psychologically. This worsens the divide. The boy sees the gang as protector, the police as predator, and another child is lost, not to death, but to bitterness. The path back, can they be saved? Yes, but not with lectures, not with fear, not with statistics. They need safe zones, youth centers, music hubs, sports programs, mentors, reformed gang members, real role models, support systems, food, transport, emotional care, opportunity, not talk of opportunity, actual income and growth. And above all, they need time, because trauma doesn't end with a program. It ends with healing, truth, and consistency. Final reflection, the lost sons. Jamaica is losing its sons, not to laziness, not to drugs, not to foreign culture, but to the void, the absence, the silence, the failure of systems meant to protect. But they are not beyond saving, because a boy holding a Glock at 15 is still a boy, and if we don't reach him now, the next headline won't just be about him. It'll be about who he took with him. The war isn't in Kingston. It's in Montego Bay, Jamaica's crown jewel of tourism. White sand beaches, all-inclusive resorts, cruise ship docks, and just a few minutes inland, gunfire, scam money, mass funerals. Here, beneath the billion-dollar travel economy, a brutal gang feud is raging, G-City versus Sparta. A war born from betrayal, fueled by digital wealth, and fought not just with bullets, but with Wi-Fi lyrics and live-streamed executions. This isn't a neighborhood beef. This is Jamaica's most deadly, most modern, and most viral gang war. The battlefield, St. James, Montego Bay. Montego Bay isn't just a vacation hub. It's also the headquarters of Jamaica's cybercrime economy, and the bloodiest parish on the island. Since the early 2000s, Mobay has quietly become the epicenter of lotto scamming, a hotspot for U.S.-sourced illegal firearms, home to heavily armed, young, and decentralized gang cells. At the heart of it all are two names, G-City Gang, Glen Devon / Norwood. Allegiance, formed in the hills of Glen Devon and Norwood. Specialty, lotto scamming, gun trafficking, rapid-fire retaliation. Structure, split into microcells led by various top man soldiers. Behavior, known for social media taunts, viral funeral videos, and public killings. Sparta Gang, Catherine Hall / Flanker. Allegiance, based in Flanker and nearby Catherine Hall. Specialty, scamming, musical influence, cultural camouflage. Public tie, associated in media, though not legally proven, with entertainer Tommy Lee Sparta, who served prison time on gun charges. Behavior, uses music, coded language, and cyber intimidation. This is not an ideological conflict. This is a deadly power struggle over respect, street dominance, and digital gold. The blood behind the money. Both gangs earn millions in lotto scam money, wired in from unsuspecting Americans. Each chop line, a scam target, becomes a cash cow funding. Gun purchases, bail for arrested gangsters, motorbikes, cars, luxury gear, funeral displays, hitmen contracts. With scamming as the financial engine, every man becomes a valuable asset. And when a gang member is killed, the retaliation is instant. Not just for loyalty, but to protect the revenue stream. When music turns to murder, the Sparta side has long been linked, fairly or unfairly, to the entertainment world. Artists associated with Flanker drop music that represents the crew's identity, mocks rivals with coded lyrics, builds clout and recruitment appeal. G-City responded with diss tracks and threat-filled freestyles, often filmed in graveyards or next to luxury vehicles bought with scam money. When one side drops a song, the other replies, often with a song and a bullet. The digital battlefield, social media as weapon. Gang affiliates now go live during turf patrols, film drive-by ops, post after-action videos mocking the dead, threaten rivals in comment sections, use burner accounts to track, bait, and harass. Some of the most chilling clips come not from security footage, but from the gangsters themselves, recording their movements like it's a movie. Instagram captions often include cryptic threats like, "One don gone, two more fi drop. Me nah miss like de last time." These posts attract thousands of views, especially among youth who treat the feud like an ongoing series. But behind every post is a casket. Death toll, the human cost. Between 2018 and 2024, law enforcement linked over 300 murders in St. James directly to the G-City versus Sparta war, most of them young men under 30. Victims include street-level foot soldiers, girlfriends and family members, innocent bystanders caught in drive-bys, children in homes mistaken for safe houses. Entire communities like Norwood, Salt Spring, and Flanker have been placed under Zoso lockdown, with military checkpoints, 24/7 patrols, and mass detentions. But the killings continue, because for every man killed, a friend vows revenge. Community collapse. In areas caught between the war, businesses are forced to pay protection tax to operate. School attendance drops when violence flares. Taxi routes are altered to avoid crossfire zones. Residents speak in whispers, fearing both gangs and police. Mothers send children away, sometimes overseas, for safety. Many residents say, "The police only come after blood is spilled. We just try not to look like we know anything." Law enforcement's dilemma. Police forces have conducted joint operations with MOCA and the JDF, seized dozens of weapons, arrested mid-level soldiers, monitored music and social media for threats. But the impact is limited, because the gangs are younger, smarter, digitally savvy, and more decentralized than previous criminal structures. There's no Big Don to cut off. There's only a network of violence, constantly regenerating. Why this war is different? G-City versus Sparta is not just a gang war. It's a mirror of Jamaica's new criminal economy, fueled by cybercrime, promoted through digital media, glamorized by music, enabled by foreign gun pipelines, ignored by many in the middle class and political elite. And all of it happens under the eyes of a tourism industry desperate to keep the beaches sanitized and the headlines clean. Final reflection, blood on the beachfront. To the world, Montego Bay is sun, rum, and reggae. But to many Jamaican families, it's a battlefield. The war between G-City and Sparta has destroyed hundreds of lives, corrupted entire neighborhoods, and raised a generation of boys who view death as inevitable. Yet the music still plays. The hotels still profit. The murders still go unmentioned in the brochures. But step outside the resort gates, and the truth is loud. Montego Bay isn't just Jamaica's tourism capital. It's also its digital war capital. And in this war, everyone is watching, but too few are acting. The funerals don't stop. The vigils fade faster. The names keep coming. Kevin, Jaheim, Ricardo, Tevin, Omari. Each one gone too soon. Each one a child of the system. Each one a symptom of something deeper. After 9 chapters of war, terror, betrayal, and blood, we now ask the hardest question of all. Can Jamaica break the cycle? Or is this generation and the next already lost? The answer is not simple. But in the back streets of Kingston, the hills of Montego Bay, and the silence of mothers who've buried too many sons, something is rising. Not resistance, not vengeance, but hope. The survivors who refuse to stay silent. There are young men who left the gangs. Not all in body, but in mind, in spirit. Some served time, came home changed, and vowed never to recruit another youth. Others survived near-death shootings and used the trauma as fuel to mentor the very boys who once idolized them. These men now run community football clubs, lead conflict resolution workshops, speak in schools when they're allowed in, act as unofficial mediators during turf tension flare-ups. Their power isn't from status. It's from story. Because when a man says, "I've buried more brothers than I can count," people listen. Youth centers and at-risk programs, a thin line of defense. In places like August Town, Trench Town, and Flanker, a patchwork of grassroots organizations has emerged. They offer free after-school tutoring, music production training, barbering and cosmetology classes, coding workshops, mentorship sessions from reformed gang affiliates. They are not funded like they should be. They are often targeted by skeptics, ignored by politicians, or accused of harboring criminals. But they are there, every day, doing what the state can't or won't. Music is therapy, not warfare. Some artists are stepping away from clout-driven violence and turning toward upliftment, education, and legacy. New songs now speak of regret, growth, healing, faith, the need for second chances. These tracks don't go as viral yet, but they're resonating with youth looking for an exit path from the battlefield. In communities where violence is the norm, even a single positive lyric can change a boy's mind. Because culture isn't just reflective, it's directive. The mothers who won't give up. They've lost sons. They've been silenced. They've been told to stay out of man business. But many Jamaican mothers are now rising as the most powerful anti-gang voices in the country. Groups like Mothers Against Violence, MAV, Hear Me Cry Foundation, Mothers United in Hope. These women hold healing circles in communities torn by war, visit prisons to speak with incarcerated youth, led prayer walks through known gang zones, organize safe zones for at-risk children. Their power is rooted not in weapons, but in grief that has been turned into activism. They don't beg for justice. They demand transformation, systemic solutions, what needs to happen. Jamaica cannot arrest its way out of this crisis. Zoso, SOE, and gun seizures are temporary. What is needed is structural rebuilding, including education reform, fix dropout pipeline, introduce trauma-informed teaching, make vocational training mandatory in high-risk zones, youth employment programs, government-funded internships, microgrants for creative projects and local businesses, pathways from street hustle to legal enterprise, police reform, accountability units, remove corrupt officers, restore trust through true community policing, mental health access, trauma counseling in schools, mobile therapists in gang zones, safe spaces for grief, anger, and shame to be processed, cultural re-education, support art, music, and dance that speaks to healing, not hype, include gang exit success stories in national campaigns, normalize forgiveness, redemption, and vulnerability. But what about the youth already inside? Here's the truth. Some of them want out, but they don't know how. They're in too deep. They've killed. They've buried their best friends. They think they're monsters. But no child starts out broken. They're broken by what happens after they're born. Reform means offering exit ramps, not just cages. It means saying, you did wrong, but you still have worth. Let's build something new. Final reflection, the last door before the bullet. Jamaica's gang crisis is not unsolvable. It is a human crisis, a story of neglect, identity, trauma, and the fight for belonging. We've documented the violence, the betrayal, the digital evolution, the war for turf, clout, and youth. But now we offer a mirror. Because every child holding a gun is a question. Do you see me? And if we answer with prison's silence or indifference, then we have no right to mourn when the bullets return. But if we answer with love, structure, and honest opportunity, Jamaica won't just stop the war. It will heal a nation that's been bleeding too long. Let this be more than a documentary. Let this be a warning, a memorial, and a beginning.